red wig and be Mary Jane Watson, mostly because he already had the costume, and because he's really fit from lacrosse, and why not give the people what they want? His words, not mine. In the end, we decided to go as Tyler Durden and Marla Singer from Fight Club. It was actually my best friend Chris's idea. She and Kitty and I were watching it at my house, and Chris said, "You and Kavinsky should go as those psychos." She said it would be good for the shock value. For me, anyway. At first, I balked because Marla isn't Asian, and I have my only Asian people costumes policy. But then Peter's mom found him a red leather jacket at an estate sale, and it just came together. As for my costume, Ms. Rothschild is loaning me clothes from her own wardrobe, because she was young in the 90s. This morning, Ms. Rothschild comes over before work to help me get ready. I'm sitting at the kitchen table in her black slip dress and a fake mohair jacket and a wig, which Kitty delights in messing up to get that crazy bedhead look. I keep swatting her moosed-up hands away, and she keeps saying, "But this is the look!" "You're lucky I'm a pack rat," Ms. Rothschild says, sipping coffee from her thermos. She reaches into her bag and tosses me a pair of high, high black platform heels. "When I was in my 20s, Halloween was my thing. I was the queen of dressing up. It's your turn to take the crown now, Largene." "You can still be the queen," I tell her. "No, dressing up in costumes is a young person's game. If I wore a sexy Sherlock Holmes costume now, I'd just look desperate." She fluffs up my wig. "It's all right. My time has passed." To Kitty, she says, "What do you think? A little more gunmetal eyeshadow, right?" "Let's not take it too far," I say. "This is still school." "The whole point of wearing a costume is taking it too far," Ms. Rothschild says airily. "Take lots of pictures when you get to school. Text them to me so I can show my work friends. They'll get a kick out of it." God, speaking of work, what time is it? Ms. Rothschild is always running late, something that drives Daddy crazy because he's always 10 minutes early. And yet? When Peter comes to pick me up, I run outside and open the passenger side door and scream when I see him. His hair is blonde! "Oh my God!" I shriek, touching his hair. "Did you bleach it?" He grins a self-satisfied kind of grin.
"It's spray. My mom found it for me. I can use it again when we do Romeo and Juliet for Halloween."
He's eyeing me in my getup.
"I like those shoes. You look sexy."
I can feel my cheeks warm up.
"Be quiet."
As he backs out of my driveway, he glances at me again and says,
"It's the truth, though."
I give him a shove. "All I'm saying is people better know who I am."
"I've got you covered,"
he assures me. And he does. When we walk down the senior hallway, Peter cues up the Pixies' "Where Is My Mind" on his phone, loud, and people actually clap for us. Not one person asks if I'm a manga character. After school, Peter and I are lying on the couch. His feet are hanging off the end. He's still in his costume, but I've changed into my regular clothes.
"You always have the cutest socks," he says, lifting up my right foot.
These ones are gray with white polka dots and yellow bear faces. Proudly, I say, "My great aunt sends them from Korea. Korea has the cutest stuff, you know."
"Can you ask her to send me some, too? Not bears, but maybe, like, tigers? Tigers are cool."
"Your feet are too big for socks as cute as these. Your toes would pop right out." "You know what? I bet I could find you some socks that fit at, the zoo." Peter sits up and starts tickling me. I gasp out, "I bet the pandas or gorillas have to keep their feet warm somehow in the winter. Maybe they have some kind of deodorized sock technology as well." I burst into giggles. "Stop! Stop tickling me!"
"Then stop being mean about my feet."
I've got my hand burrowed under his arm, and I'm tickling him ferociously, but by doing so, I have opened myself up to more attacks. I yell, "Okay, okay, truce!" He stops, and I pretend to stop, but sneak a tickle under his arm, and he lets out a high-pitched, un-Peter-like shriek. "You said truce!" he accuses. We both nod and lie back down out of breath.
"Do you really think my feet smell?"
I don't. I love the way he smells after a lacrosse game, like sweat and grass and him. But I love to tease, to see that unsure look cross his face for just half a beat. "Well, I mean, on game days," I say. Then Peter attacks me again, and we're wrestling around laughing when Kitty walks in, balancing a tray with a cheese sandwich and a glass of orange juice. "Take it upstairs," she says, sitting down on the floor. "This is a public area." Disentangling myself, I give her a glare. "We aren't doing anything private, Catherine."
"Your sister says my feet stink," Peter says, pointing his foot in her direction. "She's lying, isn't she?"
She deflects it with a pop of her elbow. "I'm not smelling your foot," she shudders. "You guys are kinky." I yelp and throw a pillow at her. She gasps. "You're lucky you didn't knock over my juice. Daddy will kill you if you mess up the rug again." Pointedly, she says, "Remember the nail polish remover incident?" Peter ruffles my hair.
"Clumsy Lara Jean."
I shove him away from me. "I'm not clumsy. You're the one who tripped over your own feet trying to get to the pizza the other night at Gabe's." Kitty bursts into giggles, and Peter throws a pillow at her.
"You guys need to stop ganging up on me," he yells.
"Are you staying for dinner?" she asks when her giggles subside.
"I can't. My mom's making chicken fried steak."
Kitty's eyes bulge. "Lucky? Lara Jean, what are we having?" "I'm defrosting some chicken breasts as we speak," I say. She makes a face, and I say, "If you don't like it, maybe you could learn to cook. I won't be around to cook your dinners anymore when I'm at college, you know." "Yeah, right. You'll probably be here every night." She turns to Peter. "Can I come to your house for dinner?"
"Sure," he says. "You can both come."
Kitty starts to cheer, and I shush her. "We can't, because then Daddy will have to eat alone. Ms. Rothschild has Soul Cycle tonight." She takes a bite of her cheese sandwich. "I'm making myself another sandwich, then. I don't want to eat old freezer-burned chicken." I sit up suddenly. "Kitty, I'll make something else if you'll braid my hair tomorrow morning. I want to do something special for New York." I've never been to New York before in my life. For our last family vacation, we took a vote, and I picked New York, but I was voted down in favor of Mexico. Kitty wanted to eat fish tacos and swim in the ocean, and Margot wanted to see Mayan ruins and have a chance to work on her Spanish. In the end, I was happy to be outvoted. Before Mexico, Kitty and I had never even left the country. I've never seen water so blue. "I'll braid your hair only if I have time left over after I do mine," Kitty says, which is the best I can hope for, I suppose. She's just so good at doing hair. "Who will braid my hair when I'm at college?" I muse.
"I will," Peter says, all confidence.
"You don't know how," I scoff.
"The kid'll teach me, won't you, kid?"
"For a price," Kitty says. They negotiate back and forth before finally settling on Peter taking Kitty and her friends to the movies one Saturday afternoon, which is how I come to be sitting cross-legged on the floor while Peter and Kitty sit on the couch above me, Kitty demonstrating a French braid, and Peter recording it on his phone. "Now you try it," she says. He keeps losing a piece and getting frustrated.
"You have a lot of hair, Lara Jean."
"If you can't get the French, I'll teach you something more basic," Kitty says, and there is no mistaking the contempt in her voice. Peter hears it too.
"No, I'm gonna get it. Just give me a second. I'm going to master it just like I mastered the other kind of French.
He winks at me. Kitty and I both scream at him for that. Don't talk like that in front of my sister, I yell, shoving him in the chest.
I was kidding.
Also, you're not that good at French kissing, even though, yeah, he is.
Peter gives me a who are you kidding look, and I shrug, because who am I kidding?
Later, I'm walking Peter to his car when he stops in front of the passenger side door and asks,
Hey, how many guys have you kissed?
Just three. You? John Ambrose McLaren? I say his name fast, like ripping off a band-aid, but Peter still has enough time to scowl. And Allie Feldman's cousin.
The kid with the lazy eye?
Yeah. His name was Ross. I thought he was cute. It happened at a sleepover at Allie's. I kissed him on a dare, but I wanted to. He gives me a speculative look.
So, me, John, and Allie's cousin.
Uh-huh.
You're forgetting one person, Covey.
Who?
Sanderson.
I wave my hand. Oh, that doesn't really count.
Allie Feldman's cousin Ross, who you kissed on a dare, counts, but not Josh, who you technically cheated on me with?
Peter wags his finger at me.
Nuh-uh. I don't think so.
I shove him. We weren't actually together then, and you know it.
A technicality, but okay.
He gives me a sidelong look.
Your number's higher than mine, you know. I've only ever kissed Jen, Jamila, and you.
What about the girl you met at Myrtle Beach with your cousins?
Angelina?
A funny look crosses over his face.
Oh, yeah. How'd you know about that?
You bragged about it to everyone. It was the summer before seventh grade. I remember it drove Genevieve crazy that some other girl had kissed Peter before she did. We tried to find Angelina online, but we didn't have much to go on, just her name.
So that makes it four girls you've kissed, and you did a lot more with them than kiss Peter.
Fine. I'm on a roll now. You're the only boy I've ever kissed, and you were the first. First kiss, first boyfriend, first everything. You got so many of my firsts, and I didn't get any from you.
Sheepishly, he says, Actually, that's not entirely true.
I narrow my eyes. What do you mean?
There was never any girl at the beach. I made the whole thing up.
There was no Angelina with big boobs?
I never said she had big boobs.
Yes, you did. You told Trevor that.
Okay, fine. Jeez, you're missing the whole point, by the way.
What's the whole point, Peter? He clears his throat.
That day in McLaren's basement, you were my first kiss, too.
Abruptly, I stopped laughing.
I was? Yeah.
I stare at him. Why didn't you ever tell me?
I don't know. I guess I forgot. Also, it's embarrassing that I made up a girl. Don't tell anybody.
I'm filled with a glowy kind of wonder. So I was Peter Kavinsky's first kiss. How perfectly wonderful. I throw my arms around him and lift my chin expectantly, waiting for my goodnight kiss. He nuzzles his face against mine, and I feel gladness for the fact that he has smooth cheeks and barely even needs to shave. I close my eyes, breathe him in, wait for my kiss, and he plants a chaste peck on my forehead.
Good night, Covey.
My eyes fly open. That's all I get? Smugly, he says.
You said earlier that I'm not that good at kissing, remember?
I was kidding! He winks at me as he hops in his car. I watch him drive away. Even after a whole year of being together, it can still feel so new. To love a boy, to have him love you back, it feels miraculous. I don't go inside right away, just in case he comes back. Hands on my hips, I wait a full 20 seconds before I turn toward the front steps. which is when his car comes peeling back down our street and stops right in front of our house. Peter sticks his head out the window.
All right, then, he calls out. Let's practice.
I run back to his car. I pull him toward me by his shirt and angle my face against his. And then I push him away and run backward laughing, my hair whipping around my face.
Covey!
He yells. That's what you get, I call back gleefully. See you on the bus tomorrow. That night, when we're in the bathroom brushing our teeth, I ask Kitty, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much will you miss me when I go to college? Be honest. It's too early for this kind of talk, she says, rinsing her toothbrush. Just answer. A 4.
A 4?
You said you missed Margot a 6.5. Kitty shakes her head at me. Laura Jean, why do you have to remember every little thing? It's not healthy. The least you can do is pretend you'll miss me, I burst out. It's the decent thing to do. Margot was going all the way across the world. You're only going 15 minutes away, so I won't even have a chance to miss you.
Still.
She clasps her hands to her heart. Okay, how's this? I'm gonna miss you so much I'll cry every night. I smile. That's more like it. I'll miss you so much I'll want to slip my wrists. She cackles wildly.
Catherine, don't talk like that.
Then quit fishing for compliments, she says, and she goes off to bed while I stay behind and pack up my toiletries for the New York trip tomorrow. If I get into UVA, I'll probably just keep a set of my makeup and creams and combs here at home, so I won't have to pack every time. Margot had to be so careful about what she brought with her to St. Andrews, because Scotland is so far away and she isn't able to make the trip back home very often. I'll probably only pack for fall and winter, and leave all my summer things at home, and then just switch them out when the seasons change. Chapter 6. In the morning, Daddy drives me to school to catch the charter bus.
Call me as soon as you're settled in your room,
he says as we wait at the traffic light by school. I will.
Did you pack the emergency 20?
Yes. Last night, Daddy gave me a $20 bill to put in the secret pocket of my jacket, just in case. I have his credit card, too, for spending money. Ms. Rothschild loaned me her tiny umbrella and her portable cell phone charger. Daddy gives me a sidelong look and a sigh.
It's all happening so fast now. First your senior trip, then prom, then graduation. Only a matter of time before you're out of the house, too.
You'll still have Kitty, I say, though it's true that she isn't exactly the ray of sunshine that I am. He laughs. If I get into UVA, I'll be around all the time, so don't you worry about a thing. I sing it the way he does, like Stevie Wonder. On the bus, I sit next to Peter. Chris sits with Lucas. I thought it might be a tough sell to get Chris to come on the senior trip, and it would have been if Disney World had won out. But she's never been to New York before either, so it ended up being easy peasy. We're on the road for an hour before Peter engages everybody in a game of Never Have I Ever, which I pretend to be asleep for, because I've not done much of anything, drugs-wise or sex-wise, and that's all anybody cares about. Mercifully, the game dies down pretty fast. I suppose because it's a lot less exciting when there are no red solo cups involved. Just as I'm opening my eyes and stretching my arms and waking up, Gabe suggests truth or dare, and my stomach does a nosedive. Ever since Peter's in my hot tub video scandal last year, I felt self-conscious about what people might be thinking about what we do or don't do. Sex-wise, I mean. And truth or dare is miles worse than never have I ever. How many people have you had sex with? Have you ever been in a three-way? How many times a day do you jerk off? Those are the kinds of questions people ask each other, and if anybody ever asked them of me, I would have to say that I'm a virgin, and in some ways, that's even more subversive than any other answer. Usually, I slip away to the kitchen or another room when this game gets started at other parties. But there's nowhere for me to slip away to today, for we are on a bus, and I am well and truly trapped. Peter gives me an amused look. He knows what I'm thinking. He says he doesn't care what people think, but I know that's not true. Historically, Peter cares very much what other people think of him.
Truth or dare? Gabe says to Lucas.
Lucas takes a swig of his vitamin water.
Truth. Have you ever had sex with a dude?
My whole body goes tight. Lucas is gay and he's out, but he isn't out. He doesn't want to deal with having to explain himself to people all the time, and why should he have to? It's not like it's anybody else's business. There's a quick beat before Lucas says,
No? Is that an offer?
Everybody laughs, and Lucas has a slight smile on his face as he takes another swig of vitamin water. But I can see the tension in his neck, his shoulders. It must take a toll, having to be on guard for these kinds of questions, ready to deflect, to smile, to laugh it off. My virginity question is tiny in comparison. But I still don't want to answer. I pray that Lucas picks me next, because I know he'll go easy on me. But Lucas must not notice the pleading glances I'm throwing his way, because instead of picking me, he chooses Genevieve, who's sitting a few rows back looking at her phone. She's been dating a guy from her church, and he goes to a different school, so no one sees her around as much. I heard from Chris that her parents got divorced, and that her dad moved into a new condo with his girlfriend. Chris said Genevieve's mom had a breakdown and had to be hospitalized for a few days, but things are better now, which I'm glad for. Peter sent daffodils to her mom when she came back home, and we labored over what the card should say. We finally decided on just, Be well, Wendy. Love, Peter. The flowers were my idea, and I chipped in, but of course I didn't put my name on the card. I've just always liked Wendy. She's been nice to me since I was little. I still get that nervous dip in my stomach when I see Genevieve, but not as bad as it used to be. I know we'll never be friends again, and I've made my peace with it.
Truth or dare, Jen? Lucas calls out.
She looks up. Automatically, she says, Dare. Of course Genevieve picks dare. She's a lot of things, but she's no coward. I'd rather do anything than answer a sex question, so I'll likely be picking dare, too. Lucas dares Genevieve to go sit next to Mr. Jane and put her head on his shoulder.
Make it believable, Lucas says.
Everyone howls with laughter. I can tell she really doesn't want to do it, but again, she's not a coward. We all watch as she makes her way up the aisle and then stops at Mr. Jane's row. Mr. Jane is new this year. He teaches biology. He's on the younger side, handsome. He wears skinny jeans with button-downs to school. Genevieve slides into the seat next to him, and all I can see is the back of her head as she talks. He's smiling. Then she snuggles closer to him and drops her head on his shoulder, and he jumps like a scared cat. Everyone is laughing, and Mr. Jane turns around and shakes his head at us, looking relieved it was a joke. Genevieve returns to us triumphant. She takes her seat and looks around the group. Our eyes meet for a moment, and my stomach dips. Then she looks away.
Truth or dare, Chrissy?
This game is so lame, Chris says. Jen just stares at her, eyebrows raised in challenge. And Chris finally rolls her eyes and says,
Whatever.
Truth.
When they go head-to-head like this, it's impossible not to notice that they are related. First cousins on their mom's side. Genevieve takes her time thinking up her question. Then she lands the whammy.
Did you or did you not play doctor with our cousin Alex when we were in third grade? And don't lie.
Everyone is whooping and hollering, and Chris's face has gone bright red. I give her a sympathetic look. I know the answer to this one.
True,
she mutters, and everyone howls. Luckily for me, this is about when Mr. Jane gets up and puts a DVD in the DVD player, so the game dissolves and my turn never comes. Chris turns around and says to me in a low voice,
You got off so easy.
Don't I know it?
I whisper back, and Peter chuckles. He can chuckle all he wants, but I'm sure he's a little relieved too. Not that he's ever said so, but it's not like he'd want the whole senior class to know that he and his girlfriend of a year, longer if you count our fake relationship, have never had sex before. Hardly anybody in our class has been to New York City, so we're all just a little wide-eyed about it. I don't think I've ever been in a place so alive. It's a city that has its own heartbeat. I just can't believe how many people there are, how crowded it is, how sophisticated everyone looks. They all look like city people. Except for the tourists like us, of course. Chris tries to act bored and unfazed by it all. But when we get on the subway to go to the Empire State Building, she doesn't hold on to the pole and nearly falls over when we come to a sudden stop.
It's different than in D.C., she mutters.
That's for sure. D.C. is the closest big city to Charlottesville, but it's still a sleepy little town compared to New York. There's so much to see, so many stores I wish we could stop in. Everyone is in a hurry. They all have plans and places to be. Peter gets screamed at by an old lady for walking and looking at his cell phone, which makes everyone laugh. And for once, Peter is embarrassed. It's also overwhelming. When we get to the Empire State Building, I make Peter take a selfie with me at the elevators. At the top, I feel lightheaded. We're so high up. Miss Davenport tells me to sit with my head between my knees for a minute, which helps. When the nausea passes, I get up and go looking for Peter, who's disappeared during my time of need. As I turn the corner, I hear Peter calling out, Wait! Wait, sir! He's following a security guard who is approaching a red backpack on the floor. The security guard bends down and picks it up.
Is this yours?
He demands.
Yeah.
Why did you leave it on the ground? He unzips the backpack and pulls out a teddy bear. Peter's eyes dart around.
Can you put that back inside? It's a promposal for my girlfriend. It's supposed to be a surprise.
The security guard is shaking his head. He mutters to himself and starts looking in the backpack again.
Sir, please, just squeeze the bear.
I'm not squeezing the bear, the security guard tells him. Peter reaches out and squeezes the teddy bear, and the bear squeaks out,
Will you go to prom with me, Lara Jean?
I clap my hands to my mouth in delight. Sternly, the security guard says,
You're in New York City, kid. You can't just leave a backpack on the ground for your proposal.
It's actually called a promposal, Peter corrects, and the security guard gives him a look.
Sorry, can I just have the bear back?
He spots me then.
Tell him Sleepless in Seattle is your favorite movie, Lara Jean.
I rush over. Sir, it's my favorite movie. Please don't kick him out. The security guard is trying not to smile.
I wasn't going to kick him out, he says to me.
To Peter, he says,
Just be more aware next time. In New York, we're vigilant. If we see something, we say something. Do you feel me? This is not whatever little country town you guys are from. This is New York City. We do not play around here.
Both Peter and I nod, and the security guard walks away. As soon as he's gone, Peter and I look at each other and break out into giddy laughter.
Somebody reported my book bag, he says. My promposal got fucked.
I take the teddy bear out of his bag and hug it to my chest. I'm so happy I don't even tell him not to cuss. I love it.
You were going to turn the corner and see the book bag right here by the telescopes. Then you were going to pick up the bear and squeeze it and...
How was I going to know to squeeze it? I ask.
Peter pulls a crumpled piece of paper out of the bag. It says, squeeze me.
It fell off when the security guard was manhandling it. See? I thought of everything.
Everything, except the ramifications of leaving an unattended bag in a public place in New York City. But still, it's the thought that counts, and the thought is the sweetest. I squeeze the bear, and again he says, Will you go to prom with me, Lara Jean?
Yes, I will, Howard.
Howard is, of course, the name of the bear from Sleepless in Seattle.
Why are you saying yes to him and not to me?
Peter demands.
Because he asked.
I raise my eyebrows at him and wait. Rolling his eyes, Peter mumbles,
Lara Jean, will you go to prom with me?
God, you really do ask for a lot.
I hold the bear out to him. I will, but first kiss Howard.
Cubby, no. Hell no.
Please. I give him a pleading look.
It's in the movie, Peter.
And grumbling, he does it, in front of everybody, which is how I know he is utterly and completely mine. On the bus to our hotel in New Jersey, Peter whispers to me,
What do you think? Should we sneak out after bed checks and come back to the city?
He's mostly joking. He knows I'm not the type to sneak out on a school trip. His eyes go wide when I say, How would we even get to the city? Do taxis go from New Jersey to New York? I can't even believe I'm considering it. It's so unlike me. Hastily, I say, No, never mind, we can't. We'd get lost or mugged, and then we get sent home. And then I'd be so mad we missed out on Central Park and everything. Peter gives me a skeptical look.
Do you really think Jane and Davenport would send us home?
Maybe not. But they might make us stay at the hotel all day long as punishment, which is even worse. Let's not risk it. Then, what would we do? I'm playing pretend now. Not really planning, but Peter plays along.
We could go hear some live music or go to a comedy show. Sometimes famous comedians do surprise sets.
I wish we could see Hamilton. When we drove through Times Square, Lucas and I craned our heads to see if we could get a glimpse of the Hamilton marquee, but no such luck.
Tomorrow, I want to get a New York bagel and see how it stacks up against Bodo's.
Bodo's bagels are legendary in Charlottesville. We're very proud of those bagels. Putting my head on his shoulder, I yawn and say, I wish we could go to Levan Bakery so I could try their cookie. It's supposed to be like no chocolate chip cookie you've had before. I want to go to Jacques Therese's chocolate shop, too. His chocolate chip cookie is the definitive chocolate chip cookie, you know. It's truly legendary. My eyes drift closed, and Peter pats my hair. I'm starting to fall asleep when I realize he's unraveling the milkmaid braids Kitty pinned on the crown of my head. My eyes fly back open. Peter!
Shh! Go back to sleep. I want to practice something.
You'll never get it back to how she had it.
Just let me try,
he says, collecting bobby pins in the palm of his hand. When we get to the hotel in New Jersey, despite his best efforts, my braids are lumpy and loose and won't stay pinned. I'm sending a picture of this to Kitty so she'll see what a bad student you are, I say as I gather up my things.
No, don't,
Peter quickly says. Which makes me smile. The next day is surprisingly spring-like for March. The sun is shining, and flowers are just beginning to bud. It feels like I'm in You've Got Mail when Kathleen Kelly goes to meet Joe Fox in Riverside Park. I would love to see the exact garden where they kiss at the end of the movie, but our tour guide brings us to Central Park instead. Chris and I are taking pictures of the Imagine mosaic in Strawberry Fields when I realize Peter is nowhere in sight. I ask Gabe and Durrell, but no one's seen him.
I text him, but he doesn't reply. We're about to move on to Sheep Meadow for a picnic, and I'm starting to panic because what if Mr. Jane or Ms. Davenport notices he's not here? He comes jogging up just as we're about to go. He's not even out of breath, or the least bit concerned he almost got left behind. Where were you? I demand. We almost left. Triumphantly, he holds up a brown paper bag.
Open it and see.
I grab the bag from him and look inside. It's a Levan chocolate chip cookie, still warm. Oh my God, Peter, you're so thoughtful! I get on my tiptoes and hug him, and then turn to Chris. Isn't he so thoughtful, Chris? Peter's sweet, but he's never this sweet. This is two romantic things in a row, so I figure I should praise him accordingly, because the boy responds well to positive reinforcement. She's already got her hand inside the bag, and she stuffs a piece of cookie in her mouth.
Very thoughtful.
She reaches for another piece, but Peter snatches the bag away from her.
Damn, Chris! Let Cubby have a bite before you eat the whole thing. Well, why'd you only get one? Because it's huge, and it costs like $5 for one.
I can't believe you ran and got this for me, I say. You weren't nervous you'd get lost?
Nah, he says, all proud. I just looked at Google Maps and ran for it. I got a little turned around when I got back in the park, but somebody gave me directions. New Yorkers are really friendly. All that stuff about them being rude must be bullshit.
That's true. Everyone we met has been really nice. Except for that old lady who screamed at you for walking and looking at your phone. Chris says, snickering at Peter, who scowls at her. I take a big bite of the cookie. The Levan cookie is more like a scone, really dense and doughy. Heavy, too. It really is like no chocolate chip cookie I've ever tasted.
So?
Peter asks me.
What's the verdict?
It's unique. It's in a class of its own. I'm taking another bite when Ms. Davenport comes up and hustles us along, eyeing the cookie in my hand. Our tour guide has a pointer that looks like the Statue of Liberty's torch, and he holds it up in the air to shepherd us through the park. It's actually pretty embarrassing, and I wish we could just go off by ourselves and explore the city, but no. He has a ponytail, and he wears a khaki vest, and I think he's kind of corny, but Ms. Davenport seems to be into him. After Central Park, we take the subway downtown and get off to walk across the Brooklyn Bridge. While everyone else is in line for ice cream at Brooklyn Ice Cream Factory, Peter and I run over to Jacques Torres's chocolate shop. It's Peter's idea. Of course, I ask Ms. Davenport for permission first. She's busy talking to the tour guide, so she waves us off. I feel so grown up, walking through the streets of New York without any adults. When we get to the store, I'm so excited, I'm shaking. Finally, I get to try Jacques' famous chocolate chip cookie. I bite into it. This cookie is flat, chewy, dense. Chocolate has pooled on top and hardened. The butter and sugar taste almost caramelized. It's heaven.
Yours are better, Peter says, his mouth rudely full,
and I shush him, looking around to make sure the girl at the register didn't hear. Stop lying, I say.
I'm not.
He is. I just don't know why mine aren't like his, I say. It must be the industrial ovens. It seems I'll just have to accept my not-quite-perfect chocolate chip cookie and be content with good enough. As we step out the door, I notice a bakery across the street called Almondine, and another one on the opposite corner called One Girl Cookies. New York is truly a city of baked goods. Peter and I walk back to the ice cream shop holding hands. Everyone is out on the pier, sitting on benches, eating their ice cream, and taking selfies with the Manhattan skyline behind them. New York keeps surprising me with how pretty it is. Peter must be thinking the same thing because he squeezes my hand and says, "This city is awesome."
It really is.
I'm sound asleep when there's a knock at the door. I wake up with a start. It's still dark outside. In the bed across the room, Chris doesn't stir. Then I hear Peter's voice on the other side of the door.
Covey, it's me. Want to go watch the sunrise on the roof?
I get out of bed and open the door, and there is Peter in a UVA hoodie holding a styrofoam cup of coffee and a cup with a tea bag hanging out the side.
What time is it?
5:30. Hurry, go get your coat.
Okay, give me 2 minutes,
I whisper. I run to our bathroom and brush my teeth, and then I fumble around in the darkness for my jacket.
I can't find my jacket.
You can wear my hoodie,
Peter offers from the doorway. From under her blanket, Chris growls,
If you guys don't shut up, I swear to God.
Sorry,
I whisper.
Do you want to watch the sunrise with us?
Peter shoots me a pouty look, but Chris's head is still under her blanket, so she doesn't see.
No, just leave.
Sorry,
I say, and I scurry out the door. We take the elevator to the top, and it's still dark outside, but it's beginning to get light. The city is just waking up. Right away, Peter shrugs out of his hoodie, and I put my arms up and he slips it over my head. It's warm and smells like the detergent his mother uses. Peter leans over the edge, looking across the water to the city.
Can't you picture us living here after college? We could live in a skyscraper, with a doorman, and a gym.
I don't want to live in a skyscraper. I want to live in a brownstone in the West Village, near a bookstore.
We'll figure it out, he says.
I lean over the edge, too. I never would have pictured myself living in New York City. Before I came here, it seemed like such an intimidating place for tough people who aren't afraid to get into a fight with someone on the subway, or men in suits who work on Wall Street, or artists who live in Soho lofts. But now that I'm here, it's not so scary, not with Peter by my side. I steal a look at him.
Is this how it goes?
You fall in love, and nothing seems truly scary anymore. And life is one big possibility? Chapter 7. It's a 6-hour trip back to Virginia, and I'm asleep for most of it. It's dark out by the time we pull into the school parking lot, and I see Daddy's car parked up front. We've all had our own cars and been driving ourselves around for so long, but pulling into the school parking lot and seeing all the parents waiting there for us feels like being in elementary school again, like coming back from a field trip. It's a nice feeling. On the way home, we pick up a pizza, and Ms. Rothschild comes over, and she and Daddy and Kitty and I eat it in front of the TV. After, I unpack, do the bit of homework I have left, talk to Peter on the phone, and then get ready for bed. But I end up tossing and turning for what feels like eternity. Maybe it's all the sleep I got on the bus, or maybe it's the fact that any day now I'll hear from UVA. Either way, I can't sleep, so I creep downstairs and start opening drawers. What could I bake this time of night that wouldn't involve waiting for butter to soften? It's a perpetual question in my life. Ms. Rothschild says we should just leave butter out in a dish like she does, but we aren't a leave-the-butter-out family. We are a butter-in-the-refrigerator family. Besides, it messes with the chemistry if the butter is too soft, and in Virginia in the spring and summertime, butter melts quick. I suppose I could finally try baking the cinnamon roll brownies I've been playing around with in my head. Katharine Hepburn's brownie recipe, plus a dash of cinnamon, plus cinnamon cream cheese swirl on top. I'm melting chocolate in a double boiler and already regretting starting this project so late when Daddy pads into the kitchen in the tartan robe Margot gave him for Christmas this past year.
You can't sleep either, huh?
He says. I'm trying out a new recipe.
I think I might call them Cinnabrownies or Sinbrownies.
Good luck waking up tomorrow, Daddy says, rubbing the back of his neck.
I yawn. You know, I was thinking maybe you'd call in for me, and I'd sleep in a little, and then you and I could have a nice, relaxing father-daughter breakfast together. I could make mushroom omelets.
He laughs. Nice try. He nudges me toward the stairs. I'll finish up the sin brownies, or whatever they're called. You go to bed.
I yawn again. Can I trust you to do a cream cheese swirl?
Daddy looks alarmed, and I say, forget it. I'll finish making the batter and bake them tomorrow.
I'll help, he says.
I'm pretty much done.
I don't mind.
Okay, then. Can you measure me out a quarter cup of flour?
Daddy nods and gets out the measuring cup.
That's the liquid measuring cup. We need the dry measuring cup so you can level off the flour.
He goes back to the cupboard and switches them out. I watch as he scoops flour and then carefully takes a butter knife to the top.
Very good.
I learned from the best, he says.
I cock my head at him. Why are you still awake, Daddy?
I guess I have a lot on my mind.
He puts the top back on the flour canister and then stops and hesitates before asking,
how do you feel about Trina? You like her, right?
I take the pot of chocolate off the heat. I like her a lot. I think I might even love her. Do you love her? This time, Daddy doesn't hesitate at all.
I do.
Well, good, I say. I'm glad.
He looks relieved.
Good,
he says back. Then he says it again.
Good.
Things must be pretty serious if he's asking me such a question. I wonder if he's thinking of asking her to move in. Before I can ask, he says,
no one will ever take the place of your mom. You know that, don't you?
Of course I do.
I lick the chocolate spoon with the tip of my tongue. It's hot. Too hot.
It's good that he should love again. That he should have someone. A real partner.
He's been alone so long, it felt like the normal thing. But this is a better thing. And he's happy. Anyone can see it. Now that Ms. Rothschild's here, I can't picture her not here.
I'm glad for you, Daddy.
Chapter 8.
All morning long, I've been checking my phone, just like pretty much every senior at my school has been doing all week. Monday came and went with no word from UVA, then Tuesday, then Wednesday. Today is Thursday, and still nothing. The UVA admissions office always send out acceptances before April 1st, and last year, notices went out the third week of March, so it really could be any day now. The way it goes is, they put the word out on social media to check the student info system, and then you log into the system and learn your fate. Colleges used to send acceptance letters in the mail. Mrs. Duval says that sometimes parents would call the school when the mailman came, and the kid would jump in their car and drive home as fast as they could. There's something romantic about waiting for a letter in the mail, waiting for your destiny. I'm sitting in French class, my last class of the day, when someone shrieks, UVA just tweeted! Decisions are out! Madam Hunt says, calmez-vous, calmez-vous. But everyone's getting up and grabbing their phones, not paying attention to her. This is it. My hands tremble as I log into the system. My heart is going a million miles a minute waiting for the website to load. The University of Virginia received over 30,000 applications this year. The Committee on Admission has examined your application and carefully considered your academic, personal, and extracurricular credentials. And while your application was very strong, we are sorry to inform you. This can't be real. I'm in a nightmare, and any moment I'm going to wake up. Wake up, wake up, wake up!
Dimly, I can hear people talking all around me. I hear a scream of joy down the hallway. Then the bell rings, and people are jumping out of their seats and running out the door. Madam Hunt murmurs,
"They usually don't send out the notices until after school."
I look up, and she's looking at me with sad, sympathetic eyes. Mom eyes. Her eyes are what undo me. Everything is ruined. My chest hurts. It's hard to breathe. All of my plans, everything I was counting on, none of it will come true now. Me coming home for Sunday night dinner, doing laundry on weeknights with Kitty, Peter walking me to class, studying all night at Clemens Library, it's all gone. Nothing will go like we planned now. I look back down at my phone, read the words again. "We are sorry to inform you." My eyes start to blur. Then I read it again from the beginning. I didn't even get waitlisted. I don't even have that. I stand up, get my bag, and walk out the door. I feel a stillness inside of me, but at the same time this acute awareness of my heart pumping, my ears pounding. It's like all the parts are moving and continuing to function as they do, but I've gone completely numb. I didn't get in. I'm not going to UVA. They don't want me. I'm walking to my locker, still in a daze, when I nearly run right into Peter, who is turning the corner. He grabs me.
"So?"
His eyes are bright and eager and expectant. My voice comes out sounding very far away. "I didn't get in." His mouth drops.
"Wait, what?"
I can feel the lump rising in my throat. "Yeah."
"Not even waitlisted?"
I shake my head.
"Fuck!"
The word is one long exhale. Peter looks stunned. He lets go of my arm. I can tell he doesn't know what to say. "I have to go," I say, turning away from him.
"Wait, I'll come with you."
"No, don't. You have an away game today. You can't miss that."
"Covey, I don't give a shit about that."
"No, I'd rather you didn't. Just, I'll call you later." He reaches for me, and I sidestep away from him and hurry down the hallway. And he calls out my name, but I don't stop. I just have to make it to my car, and then I can cry. Not yet. Just 100 more steps, and then 100 more than that. I make it to the parking lot before the tears come. I cry the whole drive home. I cry so hard I can barely see, and I have to pull over at a McDonald's to sit in the parking lot and cry some more. It's starting to sink in that this isn't a nightmare. This is real, and this fall I won't be going to UVA with Peter. Everyone will be so disappointed. They were all expecting I'd get in. We all thought it was going to happen. I never should have made such a big deal about wanting to go there. I should have just kept it to myself, not let anyone see how much I wanted it. Now they'll all be worried for me, and it'll be worse than Madam Hunt's sad mom eyes. When I get home, I take my phone and go upstairs to my room. I take off my school clothes, put on my pajamas and crawl into bed and look at my phone. I've got missed calls from Daddy, from Margot, from Peter. I go on Instagram and my feed is all people posting their reaction shots to getting into UVA. My cousin Haven got in. She posted a screen grab of her acceptance letter. She won't be going there, though. She's going to Wellesley, her first choice. She doesn't even care about UVA. It was her safety school. I'm sure she'll feign sympathy for me when she finds out I didn't get in, but inside she'll feel secretly superior. Emily Nussbaum got in. She posted a picture of herself in a UVA sweatshirt and baseball cap. Gosh, did everyone get in? I thought my grades were better than hers. Guess not. A little while later, I hear the front door open,
and Kitty's footsteps come running up the stairs. She throws open my bedroom door, but I am on my side, eyes closed, pretending to be asleep.
Laura Jean?
She whispers. I don't reply. I need a little longer before I have to face her and Daddy and tell them I didn't make it. I make my breathing go heavy and natural, and then I hear Kitty retreat and close the door quietly behind her. Before long, I fall asleep for real. When I wake up, it's dark outside. It always feels so bleak to fall asleep when it's still light out and then wake up to darkness. My eyes feel swollen and sore. Downstairs, I hear water running in the kitchen sink and the clink of silverware against dishes. I go down the staircase and stop before I make it to the bottom. I didn't get into UVA, I say. Daddy turns around. His sleeves are rolled up, his arms soapy, his eyes even sadder than Madam Hunt's. Dad eyes. He turns off the faucet and comes over to the staircase, hoists me up, and draws me into his arms for a hug. His arms are still wet.
I'm so sorry, honey,
he says. We're almost the same height because I'm still standing on the stairs. I'm focusing on not crying, but when he finally releases me, he tips up my chin and examines my face worriedly, and it's all I can do to keep it together.
I know how badly you wanted this.
I keep swallowing to keep down the tears. It still doesn't feel real. He smooths the hair out of my eyes.
Everything is going to work out. I promise it will.
I just really didn't want to leave you guys. I cry, and I can't help it. Tears are rolling down my face. Daddy's wiping them away as fast as they can fall. He looks like he's going to cry, too, which makes me feel worse, because I had planned to put on a brave face, and now look. Putting his arm around me, he admits,
Selfishly, I was looking forward to having you so close to home. But Laura Jean, you're still going to get into a great school.
But it won't be UVA, I whisper. Daddy hugs me to him.
I'm so sorry,
he says again. He's sitting next to me on the staircase, his arm still around me when Kitty comes back inside from walking Jamie Fox Pickle. She looks from me to Daddy, and she drops Jamie's leash. Did you not get in? I wipe my face and try to shrug. No, it's okay. It wasn't meant to be, I guess. Sorry you didn't get in, she says, her voice tiny, her eyes sorrowful. Come give me a hug at least, I say, and she does. The three of us sit like that on the staircase for quite some time, Daddy's arm around my shoulder, Kitty's hand on my knee. Daddy makes me a turkey sandwich, which I eat. And then I go back upstairs and get back in bed to look at my phone again, when there's a knock at my window. It's Peter, still in his lacrosse uniform. I jump out of bed and open the window for him. He climbs inside, searches my face, and then says,
Hey, Rabbit Eyes,
which is what he calls me when I've been crying. It makes me laugh, and it feels good to laugh. I reach out to hug him, and he says,
You don't want to hug me right now. I didn't shower after the game. I came straight here.
I hug him anyway, and he doesn't smell bad to me at all. Why didn't you ring the doorbell? I ask, looking up at him, hooking my arms around his waist.
I thought your dad might not like me coming over so late. Are you okay?
Kind of. I let go of him and sit down on my bed, and he sits at my desk. Not really.
Yeah, me too.
There's a long pause, and then Peter says,
I feel like I didn't say the right things earlier. I was just bummed. I didn't think this was going to happen.
I stare down at my bedspread. I know, me either.
It just sucks so much. Your grades are way better than mine. Carey got in, and you're better than him.
Well, I'm not a lacrosse player or a golfer. I try not to sound bitter-hearted, but it's an effort. A very traitorous, very small thought worms its way into my head. It's not fair that Peter's going...